Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 27th of January, 2014. The podcast that devours the flesh of the unborn. Yep, I love eggs. This is your host, Shane Killian. And joining me again this week is Lord Hawkeye himself, Tim Dyson. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Good day, everybody.
Let's gyroscopically reorient the news of the bogus. And Tim, you're going to tell us about a pipe bomb at a Canadian airport?
Yeah, here's a bit of a reversal of what you normally expect to hear from airline security stories. In Edmonton, a pipe bomb was found in the carry-on luggage at the Edmonton International Airport, and it was carelessly handled by multiple security officers. In the end, they dumped the bomb's contents.
Okay. So what happened? Why was he getting a pipe bomb aboard a plane?
Well, it was brought on by an 18-year-old. Him and his friends had made them in their spare time, and they were going to use it to blow up an old shed and record it, just for fun, I guess. But he ended up leaving it in his bag, and he forgot about it and brought it onto a plane. Now, I'll admit, if I was airport security, I would find that story very difficult to believe, but apparently it's actually true. But what's really strange is the very lukewarm reaction everyone had to it.
How do you mean?
Well, the kid didn't get in that much trouble. He was actually allowed to bring it on, and the bomb was tossed around hands and all that sort of thing. And I think the kid got like a minor fine for it or something. Fined $100 in order to make a $500 donation to a burn unit. That's pretty much all that happened in the end. There was no major freakout, even though this was a real pipe bomb that could have hurt someone if it went off.
So they actually let him take the pipe bomb on the airplane.
Yeah.
But they took his fingernail clippers, I'll bet.
Of course.
But I think what's funny here is it's like these security experts were just kind of like tossing it around and doing all sorts of stuff with it. And they offered it back to him. He brought it into the airport, but it got placed in a forfeit bin, which means that he just decided he didn't want it back. And apparently it was left on a CATSA trainer's desk over the weekend. CATSA, I'm assuming, is like the Canadian TSA?
Yes, basically. Everyone has problems with TSA. Apparently up in Canada, we have the opposite problem. Who would have guessed?
Oh, hey, this looks like a pipe bomb here. You might want to be a little careful with that, eh?
Basically. But don't you dare bring shampoo on board. That stuff's dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, we got to confiscate this shampoo. You never know. It might be the special terrorist brand of shampoo.
Yeah.
Here's your pipe bomb back.
Yes, of course. Don't want to be rude, after all.
Right. So Obama's come out and given some lip service to all this NSA spying that's been going on. We've talked about it at length. It's actually maybe a teeny tiny little baby step in the right direction. And if we keep going at this rate, we might have the problem under control around, I don't know, 2216 or something like that.
My grandchildren will be so pleased.
Here's what James Ball of The Guardian had to say about it. Quote, Obama announced his intention to transition to a new system which would no longer require the U.S. government to directly keep the phone database itself. Phone records will still be collected, stored, and available for search by the intelligence agencies. The question of where the data actually sits is, to opponents of the program, far less significant than the fact it's being stored at all. So that's okay. It's not the NSA that's going to be doing it. Someone else in the NSA will just have access to it. That completely solves the problem.
Masters of missing the point, aren't they?
Here's what the ACLU had to say, quote, The president's decision not to end bulk collection and retention of all Americans' data remains highly troubling. The president should end, not mend, the government's collection and retention of all law-abiding Americans' data. When the government collects and stores every American's phone call data, it is engaging in a textbook example of an unreasonable search that violates the Constitution. The president's own review panel recommended that bulk data collection be ended, and the president should accept that recommendation in its entirety.
The funny thing is, these people can't claim to be clueless about what's wrong with what they're doing, because when people did it to them, they completely had a freak out. So they know being spied on sucks. They know why people are ticked off about it. There's really no excuse for this.
But there's just so much that he didn't even talk about. The only part of the telephone records he talked about was the telephony metadata, and he didn't say anything else about all of the other Patriot Act, the internet communication security and all that.
Yeah, this has just got insincere trying to do damage control all over it.
Well, the EFF, that's the Electronic Frontier Foundation, came out with a scorecard based on his speech, showing how well he did in 12 key issues, and they ranked each of these from 0 to 1, 0 being the best. There were only two he scored a 1 on: oppose the FISA Improvements Act and reform the FISA court. Okay, so he's against the FISA Improvements Act, even though he was for it before he was against it. And now he's in favor of independent advocates in FISA courts and an annual review to see what parts of it should be declassified. Personally, I don't see any reason why any court proceeding should be secret. Secret courts are the work of tyrannies. Yeah. Our Constitution guarantees a fair, speedy, and public trial.
Yeah, as you guys always love to say yourself, what exactly are you trying to hide?
Exactly. He scored 0 on no data retention mandate, stop undermining internet security, reject the third-party doctrine, embrace meaningful transparency reform, and of course, this is the most transparent administration in history, right?
Of course.
Protect national security whistleblowers, and probably the most important one, give criminal defendants all surveillance evidence. And we've covered a couple stories about that before.
Oh, yeah, where they cripple the defendant's lawyer so they can't properly defend him by not letting them see the evidence that's going to be used against him. Absolutely nonsense.
He scored 0.5 on ban no-review national security letters and provide public accounting of spy programs, 0.3 on protect the privacy rights of foreigners, and 0.2 on stop mass surveillance of digital communications. His total score was 3.5 out of 12, a failing grade to say the least.
Yeah, you'd be asked to see the teacher after class for that.
He has to stay after school and clean the erasers.
Oh, yeah. Don't be fooled. He's just trying to do damage control. He has no intention of actually taking a moral stand against spying because, well, they love it.
Mm-hmm. He benefits from it.
Of course.
And a lot of people are calling this a reversal from what he did in the Senate. It's like, wait a minute, he voted for the warrantless wiretapping in the Senate. He spoke out against it, but he voted for it.
Actions matter, words don't.
Yep. Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.pagosity.tv and get LastPass now. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's Liberty Classroom. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, Liberty Classroom teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you'll get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. So, Hawk, have you heard of the new horror movie that's coming out?
Which one? The Frankenstein one?
Oh, no. This one's really scary. Probably the scariest horror movie that's ever been done.
Oh? Really? What is it?
In this movie, marijuana is legal.
That's too scary. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. No.
Oh, wait a minute. That's not a movie. That's Colorado. Sorry. But apparently it is scary to the DEA. DEA Chief of Operations James L. Capra said, quote, "There are more dispensaries in Denver than there are Starbucks. Going down the path to legalization in this country is reckless and irresponsible. It scares us."
I'll bet it does. The prospect of having to get a real job? Yeah, I'd be pretty scared too.
Yeah, he's scared of the unemployment line.
It's only natural. There's going to be a snapback once you're legalized, but it's going to stabilize eventually. I mean, look at Amsterdam. I think once they legalized it, there was a whole bunch of it at first, and then it stabilized, and now it's gotten to the point where pretty much only tourists are doing it. Everyone else is tired of it.
Portugal didn't even do that. You know, they didn't quite legalize it all the way, but they decriminalized small amounts of it, and usage didn't start, you know, going up through the roof or anything. And yet, Capra said, quote, "In every part of the world where this experiment has been tried, it has failed time and time again." Citation needed.
Failed by what standard? If you mean failed to produce government any money? Okay, yeah, it did that.
Yeah. Well, and let's be fair, it also fails to reduce drug use, but then we don't do this to reduce drug use. We do this to reduce crime and violence. But hey, you know what has failed time and time again? Prohibition in all its forms.
Yeah, but empiricism doesn't count when it's against me.
Right.
Everyone knows that.
But now, let's just say, for the sake of the argument, that drugs should be illegal. Who do you want in charge of that? Do you want in charge of that people who are so scared of it? I mean, do you want police who are scared of bank robbers and rapists? Would you want a swim instructor who's hydrophobic? What about a roofer who's afraid of heights?
This was just overreacting to the point where you'll just look like an idiot. Senator Dianne Feinstein voiced sympathy for his outburst, attributing it to great law enforcement frustration called marijuana a gateway drug. Oh, gee, save some of those original arguments for the rest of us, would you?
Yeah, and no one is surprised.
They've got nothing but buzzwords. No one's got a single first principle attack against drug use. It's just, I don't like it, and therefore we should ban it.
Yeah, and it's all just fear-mongering. None of it's based on anything empirical. It's completely contradicted by what we have seen and what few legalization attempts there have been. Well, it was like when California legalized medical marijuana. Oh, you're going to have all these crimes. You're going to have all these people stoned and driving a car and crashing. And now what are they saying when you talk to these drug warriors who are saying, okay, what's the problem with California's medical marijuana law? Because people are going into these dispensaries and getting high. Oh, really? Well, what happened to all this crime? What happened to all these traffic accidents?
The one that some people tried to use up here was, people are going to use our healthcare system to get free marijuana to get high. That's a problem with the healthcare system, not a problem with the marijuana.
Is there a problem up there with people, like, getting free Vicodin or whatever and getting high off of that?
I've never heard of that happening. They're actually pretty serious. They actually take it quite seriously.
Well, I mean, if it's not a problem with Vicodin, why would it be a problem with marijuana?
No real reason. They just say that and provide no citation, as usual. I think this is just the best example you'll ever see that law is just an opinion with a gun.
So we keep being told that we need to give cops all this leeway and put up with cops behaving badly because they've chosen a dangerous profession, and they put their lives on the line every single day for us? Actually, guess what? That isn't true.
Oh?
According to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, 2013 had the lowest level of law enforcement fatalities in 6 decades, and the fewest officers killed by firearms since 1887.
Well, come on, how dangerous can beating up homeless people be?
And the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with their top 10 most dangerous jobs in the country. Nowhere on there is any form of law enforcement.
And the thing is, even if they did get on that list, that would not serve to justify any of this leeway. I mean, nobody would ever argue that these people should have should get leeway when it comes to violent crimes. Let's see, logging workers got first place. You get my salute, of course.
Number 2 was fishermen.
No surprise there.
I give that a thought next time you're, you know, cutting into a flounder fillet. Now think of all the fishermen who risk their lives for you.
Especially the lobster ones. I've heard all the horror stories about that.
3 is aircraft pilots. And then in order you have roofers, garbage collectors. I thought that was interesting.
Oh, don't mess with those guys. The city of Toronto learned that one the hard way.
Electrical power line installation and repair. They don't give the reasons for all these, but I wonder if that one's what I'm imagining it to be.
Falling off ladders, electrocution, things like that.
Truck drivers. Oil and gas extraction. Farmers and ranchers are number 9. Farming is more dangerous than police work.
I think one of the big ones is you're so far away from help if you do get hurt. So that's probably one of the big risks.
That's probably true. And the construction workers, number 10, again, you can probably fill in your imagination with that one as to why. But the interesting thing is, yes, there are still police deaths, but you know what the cause of most of them are?
What is that?
Traffic accidents.
Oh, driving quickly and them getting hit.
They don't say the details, but it does say it's not high-speed car chases, you know, when they're doing this, what they have to do to, you know, catch a dangerous criminal, just normal everyday traffic accidents.
Is it any higher than it is for a normal citizen?
It doesn't say.
That's interesting. Should look into that a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem is people have this perception that police get in firefights all the time. No, they don't. Not really. Most cops will tell you they're lucky if they ever see a single firefight in their whole career.
I don't think lucky is the word they use for it. But yeah, most of them go, you know, 20 years without even drawing their gun.
Well, think of this next time they try and make up reasons why they need these 18-ton armored vehicles from the Iraq War equipped with gun turrets. Just to put things in perspective.
It's so dangerous, and the garbage collectors are over there going, hey, can we have one of those?
Now, garbage collectors I'd love to see driving those things.
You say you don't like Bitcoin? Why not? Oh, because it's not gold. No problem. Just go to coins.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to Coinable, where you can buy gold or silver coins or bars with your bitcoins, with literally up-to-the-minute spot pricing. Now there's no reason not to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Whether you're a Bitcoin miner, service operator, Bitcoin business owner, or market speculator, you can get gold and silver from reputable dealers. And Coinable has Bitcoin liquidity for fast processing of your order. Coinable even utilizes a special shipping infrastructure to ensure that your investment arrives safely at your door. And you know what? By going to coins.pagosity.tv, you won't pay a penny more, excuse me, a Satoshi more for your purchase. But you'll help this podcast. You can even sell your gold and silver for Bitcoin as well. Coinable is your Bitcoin to gold marketplace. So go to coins.pagosity.tv and start turning your Bitcoins into gold now. Pagosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been a satisfied GoDaddy customer for over 10 years now. Their prices are great, and their 24/7 support is second to none. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or many other services, and get 35% off by typing in the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet service. Get your own .com with a personalized email address or establish your online business in a snap, all for 35% off. Or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for special offers on GoDaddy products. Get great savings on quality internet services. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. And now let's bake a crazy cake for this week's biggest bogon emitter. So this past Monday was Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Do you guys observe that up in Canada?
We know about him, but we don't really do much for him.
Well, it's a national holiday here in the States. And on last year's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the Air Force released a statement about how this man of peace would be totally proud and happy with them creating war.
Really? How'd they manage to pull that one off?
Well, they say King would be proud to see their global strike team because people of all colors and creeds are included in this team to come together and blow innocent people to smithereens.
Do I need to point out how racist the statement that is?
Talk about missing the point!
Just think about it. You're saying, because there's black people in our group, that means that it's supported, but you're effectively saying that all black people think the same. I mean, could you get more racist than that? Good Lord, what was this guy thinking?
Well, I think basically what they're saying is they're not segregated. See, we've got all sorts of, you know, black people and everyone else in here. They're all equal, just like King wanted. What they said is, quote, Dr. King would be proud to see our global strike team comprised of airmen, civilians, and contractors from every race, creed, background, and religion, standing side by side, ensuring the most powerful weapons in the U.S. arsenal remain in the credible bedrock of our national defense. Our team must overlook our differences to ensure perfection as we maintain and operate our weapon systems. Maintaining our commitment to our global strike team, our families, and our nation is a fitting tribute to Dr. King as we celebrate his legacy.
Oh, good grief. I mean, last I checked, blacks disproportionately make up more of the military than the rest of the population, don't they?
Yeah, and more of the lower ranks and not so much, you know, the higher ranks, the generals and colonels and things like that.
Yeah, typically black people who've been driven into poverty by the welfare state, and so they turn to the military because they have no other way to make ends meet. The military is not really the friend of black people. If anything, it preys on them.
Well, I would give the link to the Air Force's original post, but it's been taken down, so perhaps sometime in the year since they posted it, they figured out that this might not be the best thing to have up in public.
Yeah, at least there's some self-awareness there.
But I have a link to the Internet Archive page, so you can still go and check it out.
Yeah, never put anything on the Internet. It's going to be there forever, whether you want it to be or not.
Yep. And if you put something like that up, even if you take it down, you still might end up being named this week's biggest bogon emitter. And now let's price out of the market this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And this time it goes to the Economic Policy Institute for their statement urging the federal government to raise the minimum wage.
Because, hey, it worked so well before, didn't it?
Yeah.
This hit such a sore spot with me because I was screwed over royally when I was first starting out in the workforce.
How was that?
I think our province had the highest minimum wage in Canada, and it was ridiculous. Even McDonald's would not touch you if you didn't have experience. Everywhere I went, more experienced people always muscled in on me, and I had absolutely no way to compete. If I could have offered to work for less, but nope, that option was denied to me. So, minimum wage did not help me at all. Let's say you banned all food but the very finest of food, but you didn't change the actual price of it. And then said, look, everyone's eating so well now. Yeah, everyone who is eating well. The people who can't afford it, they just get this quietly expire and go hungry, but they don't show up on the statistics, so it looks good to the lawmakers, but it doesn't look good in reality.
Yeah, I mean, it's a seen and unseen things. You can see and directly talk to people who say, yeah, I was making minimum wage and now my wages have gone up. But although you'd be able to find plenty of people who lost their jobs, there'd be no way to tell for sure whether that particular person lost his job because of the minimum wage hike. But of course, that doesn't make it any less harmful.
Yeah, Jeffrey Tucker told a pretty heart-wrenching story about that. When he was young and working for a big box store or something like that, he had this coworker who was a little bit mentally deficient, but really, really nice guy, very good worker. When there was a post in the break room saying that the minimum wage was being raised, oh, he was just ecstatic about it. Said, oh, I'm going to make more money. Until he later found out they had to let him go because now the minimum wage forced them to pay him more than the value he could generate for the company. The money to pay to raise the salaries for everyone else had to come from somewhere. And so this poor guy lost his job. And do the lawmakers care? Of course not.
Well, they said, quote, we urge you to act now and enact a three-step raise of 95 cents a year for 3 years, which will mean a minimum wage of $10.10 by 2016. Here's the telling question. Why do it in small stages? Why not do it all at once? I think these guys hate the poor. Why are they only doing a minimum wage of $10.10? Why not do $20 an hour? Or $100 an hour? Hey, why don't you help everyone? Make the minimum wage $1 million an hour. Then everyone only has to work for an hour a year and we can all afford private jets. What could possibly go wrong?
I got a better idea. Politicians work for minimum wage and give the money they would have made to everyone else.
That's actually something I could get behind.
Yeah, they should be working in politics out of the goodness of their hearts, right?
I don't know. If you require politicians to work for minimum wage, then they will make the minimum wage $1 million a year.
I guess they would. Oh, well.
But, I mean, all these tiny little incremental steps, it just says to me that they know that it really does have negative employment effects, and they're trying to keep those unemployment effects so low that they just kind of get lost in the noise with all of the other reasons people become unemployed.
Yeah, the real reason they don't raise it to $20 or something is because that would be so drastic that the negative effects of minimum wage would be very plainly obvious, and can't have that.
Right. So they said raise it to $10.10 by 2016, and then index it to protect against inflation, which is something both Obama and Romney agreed on in the last campaign, in case you're wondering if there's any difference between Democrats and Republicans, but these guys haven't paid much attention to Brazil, have they?
What happened in Brazil?
Well, actually, if you go way back, Brazil had indexing where they indexed all wages to inflation, and the result was just this ridiculous hyperinflation, and it was actually pretty close to what I said. Everyone was millionaires or even billionaires, but they couldn't afford anything, so they realized what a stupid thing that was. They took it all down, and they recovered from it, but now they've put back in a higher minimum wage, and they've got it indexed to inflation, and of course, unemployment's rising, inflation's rising, even though it's just minimum wage that's indexed and not all wages, you're still seeing this effect. I mean, go figure.
You can't legislate more wealth into existence. If that were the case, why would taxation be needed? It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's just like, again, people think laws are magical incantations that they just put the right words on a piece of paper and they can make magic happen.
Well, they could certainly make money disappear, that's for sure.
Quote, the increase to 10-10 would mean that minimum wage workers who work full-time full year would see a raise from their current salary of roughly $15,000 to roughly $21,000. Well, the ones who aren't out of a job, that is.
Always the if that they like to not tell you about.
Quote, this policy would directly provide higher wages for close to 17 million workers by 2016. No, it wouldn't. It would provide those wages, like you said earlier, only for those who can demand those wages. Everyone else gets out of a job. Quote, furthermore, another 11 million workers whose wages are just above the new minimum would likely see a wage increase through spillover effects as employers adjust their internal wage ladders. You know, I've been involved in several businesses. I've owned a couple myself. And I've never seen any internal wage ladder. What the heck is that? Can you buy it at Home Depot?
This just sounds like they're making terms up to sound smart when they haven't got the slightest idea what's going on out here.
Folks, employers do not do this. How much firms spend on employees is set in market equilibrium, and government cannot change that. Whatever that equilibrium is, minus the costs of employing them, including things like taxes and benefits and stuff like that, becomes their wage. And if that wage is below the minimum wage, they can't hire them. They would lose money if they did.
Everyone has this idea that employers just have this big vault full of money they just sit on if there weren't laws making them spend more on employees. No, it doesn't work that way. Like, what is, like, less than 10% of a company's assets are in actual cash?
Well, that's the thing you keep telling people about. Whenever they do anything like this, you know, higher minimum wage, better benefits, or whatever, just ask them, where's the money going to come from?
Yeah, people have this image that, oh, it just comes from this money that they were just sitting on anyway. No, like if you make him Bill Gates have to raise his employees' wages, he's got to go close down a factory or a firm somewhere in order to raise that money. So all the people who work there are out of a job.
Or lay off some of the people so we can pay more of them more money, and that means you're producing fewer products, you're selling less, you're depressing the economy. Quote, the vast majority of employees who would benefit are adults in working families, disproportionately women, who work at least 20 hours a week and depend on these earnings to make ends meet. And the vast majority who would be hurt are disproportionately poor minorities who depend on these earnings even more to make ends meet.
Oh, here we go. Bring out the sex card. Yeah. Good grief.
I mean, minimum wage hurts minorities disproportionately. It's been shown time and time again. It's just cherry-picking. Hey, let's get the women's vote by mentioning women, but let's not mention the fact that minorities are going to be hurt.
And the whole thing about women earning less has been debunked time and time again. How many times does it have to be before we'll stick?
They don't care about facts. It's a good talking point. It's a good thing to sell to the voters.
Oh, brother.
Here's another telling phrase. Quote, at a time when persistent high unemployment is putting enormous downward pressure on wages... Well, gee, now, why would that happen? Could it be that the price mechanism is trying to drive wages down in order to put more people to work? That it's trying to take those 10.4 million unemployed people and the record 91.8 million who aren't even in the labor force and price them back into the job market?
Oh, they make it sound like minimum wage is some new thing that hasn't been done before and that's why the economy is so bad. No! You had minimum wage. That was supposed to be the solution, and the problem is not solved. Last I checked, that's considered a fail.
Oh, it's not as big as this fail. Quote, in recent years, there have been important developments in the academic literature on the effect of increases in the minimum wage, unemployment, with the weight of evidence now showing that increases in the minimum wage have had little or no negative effect on the employment of minimum wage workers, even during times of weakness in the labor market. Okay, first of all, little or no negative effect still means there is no positive effect. So basically they're saying, oh, this will only make things a little worse.
And just calling it evidence doesn't make it so. Let me see that evidence. I would love to take a look at that.
Well, I put a link in the show notes to an analysis of minimum wages and employment from the journal Macroeconomics. Quote, the oft-stated assertion that the new minimum wage research fails to support the conclusion that the minimum wage reduces the employment of low-skilled workers is clearly incorrect. Indeed, in our view, the preponderance of the evidence points to disemployment effects.
Well, there you go.
And I also said that 85% of the studies they looked at pointed to negative employment effects. That's actually a bit higher than the 80% you'll read about in macroeconomics textbooks, so it's gone up. Quote, when researchers focus on the least skilled groups most likely to be adversely affected by minimum wages, the evidence for disemployment effects seems especially strong. In contrast, we see very few, if any, cases where a study provides convincing evidence of positive employment effects of minimum wages, especially among the studies that focus on broader groups for which the competitive model predicts disemployment effects. So in other words, when they look at studies that look on the group that the model predicts having disemployment effects, or if they just look across the board, they find all this information for minimum wages resulting in lower employment. The ones that don't do that are generally the ones that cherry pick and kind of avoid looking at those groups, you know, kind of like what we said earlier, oh, we're not looking at minorities, but we're going to look over here at women or whatever, you know, and you look at those groups and say, oh, well, see, look, there was a positive benefit there. That's cherry picking.
Pointing to a positive benefit to an action does not justify it. Anyone could justify anything like that. A bank robber could point to the store he bought a bunch of stuff from who benefited from his bank robbery. That doesn't mean what he did was right. The ends don't justify the means.
Yeah, it's the broken window fallacy again.
From first principles, I just asked them one simple question. What if someone wants to work at lower than minimum wage? Are you going to stop him by force if necessary? If so, explain to me how you're the good guy here. And if you can't imagine why someone would want to work minimum wage, then you clearly have not actually talked to the people you're supposed to be helping. And that's very telling to me.
Right. It's a very elitist view. It's like, you know, they don't understand why someone would take one of those really, you know, low paying jobs. Well, maybe because they're in kind of a desperate situation. Maybe they need to build up their employment history. Maybe they've screwed up in the past and they've made some mistakes and they want to try to prove themselves again. But because of the high minimum wage, no one is able to take a chance on them.
Yeah, that was the case with me because I was competing with people who were vastly more experienced than me. If I had the ability to undercut them, I could have gotten my foot in the door, but that option was denied to me.
So this study concludes, quote, we view the literature, when read broadly and critically, as largely solidifying the view that minimum wages reduce employment of low-skilled workers, and as suggesting that the low-wage labor market can be reasonably approximated by the neoclassical competitive model.
There you go. It's just like we've always said.
So this post to the Economic Policy Institute is actually a petition, and it's been signed by several economists, among which are some of the usual suspects, Robert Reich, Alan Blinder, Thomas Schelling, Robert Shapiro, Robert Solow, Larry Summers, and Joseph Stiglitz. And look, you can add your signature too. It says right on the page, add your signature, must have PhD in economics. Because that's totally how real science is done, by PhDs signing a petition.
It doesn't matter how many scientists you can get to sign a petition that gravity doesn't apply anymore, you're still going to die when you jump off a cliff.
But I mean, this is just like those, you know, anti-global warming petitions and anti-evolution petitions that keep coming around. What's the difference?
Appeal to authority has not, popularity rather, has not come full circle and become a valid argument, folks. I'm sorry, it hasn't.
Well, I checked. They don't have any Steves.
Aww.
How about that exert petition? No Steves have signed it.
Don't be fooled. People who want to raise minimum wage are not your friend. They're just snobs who want to regulate out the riffraff.
All of which means the Economic Policy Institute just has to be this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Bring Out Your Dead edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums at bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free, but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Tim Dyson for joining me.
Pleasure as always. Till next time, be aware and be wise.
Until then, here's a quote from Murray Rothbard. It is no crime to be ignorant of economics, which is, after all, a specialized discipline and one that most people consider to be a dismal science. But it is totally irresponsible to have a loud and vociferous opinion on economic subjects while remaining in this state of ignorance. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
And I'd just like to add that Rothbard quote should apply to everything and not just economics.